Support for this episode of the podcast comes from our patrons at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/chasingearhart to join the chase and become a patron today. On the morning of July 2nd, 1937, Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean without a trace. 81 years later, all over the world lie scattered pieces of their puzzle, waiting to be put together. Welcome to Season 2 of the Chasing Earhart Podcast.
Achieving the first solar flight around the world. A team driven by a vision of the future and a passion for innovation. And the first airplane of perpetual endurance, able to fly day and night without fuel. Together with their partners, they wanted to show the power of pioneering spirit and clean technologies to bring solutions for a better world. Solar Impulse, the adventure showing that change is possible.
A member of Forbes' prestigious 30 Under 30, Paige Casselin has spent her career in uncharted waters. At 22 years old, Paige made worldwide headlines as the youngest American on the ground crew for the historic record-breaking Solar Impulse flight, a feat that would thrust her into the spotlight and make her the poster woman for STEM, shining the spotlight on the field of electrical engineering. Paige has parlayed that notoriety into a formative speaking career, always being mindful of her responsibility to young women wherever she's featured. Tonight, on the 57th episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, Paige joins us via Zoom to discuss her role on Solar Impulse, the responsibility that comes with being a rock star of STEM, and why the memory and legacy of Amelia Earhart inspires her and all of those in the STEM community. The legacy is alive. Joining me tonight via Zoom is Paige Casselin. At 22 years old, her role as an electrical engineer on the ground crew for the Solar Impulse made her not only the youngest member of that team, but also the only American on said ground crew. She has navigated uncharted territory throughout the duration of her career thus far and continues to be an inspiration for women all over the world. This is an absolute pleasure. Paige, welcome to Chasing Earhart.
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start this interview off with the same question that I've asked everyone that's ever guested on our show. Can you tell our listeners a little about your education and your professional background, please?
Yeah, so I am from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I grew up there. And when it was coming time for college, I was thinking about really what I was interested in. And I would say my biggest thing was problem solving. And what better way to be an extreme problem solver than be an engineer? So I decided to go to Virginia Tech, and I studied electrical engineering there. And after that, I really thought my career, my life was just going to fit in a specific box, and I was going to be an electrical engineer. But soon after, I found there are many things I could do with my degree, and the first job I really had was helping the world's first solar-powered airplane circumnavigate the globe. So it was definitely pretty exciting.
And we'll definitely get into that. Now, I want to ask you, because I ask everybody this question as well, do you have any early recollections of Amelia Earhart when you were growing up in school?
Yes, I think It wasn't necessarily me, but I know my sister, for one of her projects, she had to dress up like a famous, just somebody involved with like some groundbreaking thing in history. And I remember she dressed up as Amelia Earhart and she did her whole presentation. And I thought it was so cool and so fun for, I don't know, students to be exploring all different types of historic figures. And then for my sister to have chosen Amelia Earhart, I thought it was a great choice.
For those that aren't familiar, you did mention Solar Impulse a little earlier. For those that aren't familiar with that, can you give us an overview of the Solar Impulse flight and how did that happen for you? And why was it such a historic feat?
So Solar Impulse was the world's first solar-powered airplane to circumnavigate the globe only using the power of the sun. So we had a lot of solar panels on the wings that would catch energy every single day, and it allowed the plane to fly day and night. So it definitely doesn't make sense to say a solar-powered airplane would fly at night. We had to make sure that there was energy gathered throughout the day, stored in batteries, and then enabled the plane to fly at night. So the journey took over a year to complete because we did a couple stops. We did a good amount of stops on different continents, which was pretty exciting. And the longest flight in total was 5.5 days, which is pretty intense to be up in an airplane. And I haven't even explained that there was only one pilot in the airplane at the time. So the two pilots would alternate flight to flight. And so 5.5 days, one person flying, hearing no hum of an engine or anything. It was just completely peaceful because it was an electric airplane that was powered by the sun.
Wow. That's really remarkable. I mean, I've watched a lot of the videos and I've read a lot of the articles. You know, we're going to talk about the Forbes article here in a bit, but I've read a lot of articles of folks who interviewed you. And what was it like to just be part of that process just as a whole? I mean, that's like we mentioned earlier in the show, it's really groundbreaking and you're really kind of doing uncharted territory there.
So at the end of the project, it really felt completely surreal. The project started and ended in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. So one of my jobs being on the ground crew was when the plane would take off and land, I was standing on the runway and getting ready to catch the wing of the airplane, mainly during landings. I would catch the wing of the airplane and make sure it was stabilized. And when I was in Abu Dhabi, I remember looking around and thinking, okay, this feels normal. There's my friend Richard down there, or there's Owen. And then thinking about, wait, I am standing in the United Arab Emirates, somewhere I didn't think that I would probably go to, with a team of people mainly from Switzerland or all over the world. And just thinking of how this thing that we were about to accomplish, flying around the world with a solar-powered airplane, was thought to be impossible. And we were about to make it happen. For that whole experience, it really opened my eyes to, you don't want to limit yourself. I thought I was going to be in that box and only be able to do things that a traditional electrical engineer would do. But all of those ideas were shattered that day because, you know, the sky's the limit for sure.
Yeah, your work on this project, it's really unprecedented. It's groundbreaking. There's no guidebook for how to guide a solar airplane. I mean, we've checked for that. There's no guidebook. There's nothing online. I've looked. What is it like? The welfare of so much is literally in your hands as you're out there trying to catch this airplane. That's incredible. That's got to be a really remarkable feeling. It's something you can't really put into words, I imagine.
Well, it was really funny because when I first joined the project, it was in Hawaii, and it wasn't a bad place to be. But I remember, you know, preparing for the experience, and there's really no way to prepare because you can't read a textbook on how to catch the wing of a solar-powered airplane or what to do in an emergency with a solar-powered airplane. So I remember I showed up, and when I first saw the Solar Impulse airplane in this hangar, I was a little bit intimidated. I was unsure of, oh gosh, I don't want to go too close to it. What if I trip, or what if I sneeze or blink too hard? Like, will it all come falling apart just because this is this historic project that had been going on for 12 years, and I didn't want to do anything to ruin it. But then I thought, well, this is my job, and this is my dream job. I can't be afraid to do what's asked of me on the ground crew. I have to grab the wing. I have to pump up the tire or guide the tail or all of these different things I was asked to do. And it definitely took a lot of courage, and it was a journey for me to really get to that point when we were standing in Abu Dhabi, and I felt very comfortable.
Okay. So I really want everyone to pay attention to this next bit because you're going to want to remember what we're going to talk about next. Now, there's a quote that you gave Forbes when they interviewed you back in 2016, and you sort of alluded to it in your last response. But since I read that quote, I haven't been able to get that quote out of my head. And the quote is very simple, but very powerful. I had to train myself to be okay with failing. That is powerful stuff. Can you explain the idea behind those words? Because young folks need to hear this.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times today people think that there's a failure culture, or they think they're okay with failing. And I've even experienced it myself where it's even more about training yourself to try and understanding that just by trying and knowing that you might fail or knowing you might succeed is really the big thing people have to be focusing on. And I knew that there were instances during Solar Impulse where I wasn't 100% sure what move I should make. So again, I've been talking about catching the wing of the airplane. There were some times I was thinking, oh gosh, should I start running now? Did I mishear something? Is everything planned properly? And I would think and second guess myself so much in my head. And I have to stop doing that because even if I made the wrong decision or made the wrong move, I was in that position because, you know, I was educated or I had the training or all of these different things. So I had to say, even if I made a move and it was the wrong move, I had to do something. So I kind of had to let go of that feeling of being perfect because if I stopped and just said, okay, I don't want to do it now. I'm not perfect. Then the airplane could have passed me by and it could have fallen and hit the wing on the ground and that wouldn't have been okay.
Yeah, I think the moral of that story is really trust your journey, trust your education, trust that everything you've done to a certain point has prepared you for that moment. I think that's a really big deal. And I think that statement you made is really kind of an echo that a lot of young project guests that we have, like astronaut Abby and Shasta Ways and Jessica Cox and folks like them, actually, you know, would echo that statement, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. You said it much more condensed than I said it there. But yep, that's the exact message.
So in that same Forbes article, I read something that struck me. You talked about overcoming struggles of doubt and you touched on it a little bit already, but being nervous to raise your hand in fear of getting an answer wrong. When in a classroom setting, when Amelia was coming up, she faced a lot of obstacles. And I often find myself wondering if she had moments of self-doubt. And I imagine that she probably did. But can you talk about facing self-doubt and pushing forward and moving forward through it?
Yes. So I really think the big secret out there is that everybody is doubting themselves constantly. So no matter what I'm doing or no matter if I'm standing up on a stage giving a presentation or doing something at work, there are a lot of times I'm thinking, wow, how confident am I with this? And how confident am I that I'm making the right decision and everything? And at the end of the day, it goes back to what I was just saying. It's you're going to fail at some points in your career, but you're trained and you were asked to take on a role because you were the best person for that position and someone believed in you. So I think surrounding yourself with mentors and surrounding yourself with sponsors and even friends and a supportive family, I think that's the biggest thing to get you through those periods of self-doubt. Because I know for me on Solar Impulse, working with an international team, even just not clicking right with the culture that I was surrounded with, there was so much self-doubt. And whenever I would call my mom or call my best friends, it made things so much easier hearing someone say, you can do it.
When you're announced as a member of the Forbes under 30 under 30 list, does that add a sense of responsibility that maybe wasn't there before that achievement? Because now you have all these accolades and all this publicity and really the world is watching you now. I mean, does that alter sort of how you chase your own dreams and how you kind of go on with your career?
That's a good question. I know growing up, I would think, even just watching someone give a presentation on a stage, I would think, wow, that would be so cool if I could ever give a presentation like that one day. And I remember growing up, all these different things, being in a magazine or doing a podcast, being on TV, thinking if I just did that, that would be so cool and I could relax. But whenever things like Forbes happens, you realize, no, this isn't the end of the goal. This is just the start because now I have to make sure I'm constantly living up to that and helping others achieve their dreams too. So I remember this past year, I was pretty excited because Forbes had asked me, hey, do you know anybody in the energy community? And I got on the list for energy. Do you know anyone in the energy community that we should look at for making the list? And I sent them a couple names, and whenever the list came out, I found out that one of the guys had made it. And just that moment of helping someone else achieve that dream or achieve that goal is amazing. And I think it goes back to what I was saying with support. It's like once you get there, you don't want to stop. You want to keep pushing yourself and then bring others along with you.
That's a very powerful statement. I think people should really, you know, rewind this back and listen to that last comment that Paige made, because it's important about bringing... You have to bring people with you. You have to not only push forward, you push forward for yourself to get past your fears and doubts and things. But once you get to where you're at, it's good to turn around and pull people with you and people that might be struggling or be in the same situation or a situation that you were already in previously that you've conquered to bring people with you. I think you're a great example of that. And that's pretty remarkable. I think that's how that's how a revolution happens. That's how, like, we talked to Shasta about that. How do you make the revolution of STEM continue? How do you make it blow up more? And that's one of the things that she said. So I think that's very big of you to do that.
Yeah, Chris. And I think that it really relates to exactly what Amelia Earhart has done with her influence on the world. She probably at the time wasn't thinking, wow, this is going to inspire so many other people, but she really has.
Yeah, I often wonder about that. When she was in, we talked to Sammy Morris, who was on our panel, discussion panel, and she's the head archivist for Purdue. And we asked her that question because Amelia was not an instructor at Purdue, but she was kind of like an advisor. She was recently hired right before she went on the world flight to be an advisor at Purdue. And when we talked to Susan Butler, who wrote East of the Dawn, she had mentioned that she received letters from women who were actually in the classrooms at Purdue when Amelia was there. And the women were saying that I was just going to get a standard degree and, you know, be done with it. And then when Amelia came into the classroom, I decided to kind of make a sharp right, and I became an engineer, or I became a mathematician, or I became an aviatrix, or, all these other things, all because Amelia really pushed, you know, science, technology, engineering, mathematics. She pushed STEM before STEM was ever a thing. I think unbeknownst to her, she was a pioneer of STEM without ever even knowing it.
Absolutely.
So I want to ask you about your field specifically, since we're on this. Well, let me ask you something just bluntly. Is there, in your eyes, is there an ongoing issue maybe with the way that men view women in STEM fields? Because there's so few women that are in STEM fields, and we really want to push that and get more women into STEM. And I was just talking with Anita Sengupta, who designed the supersonic parachute for the Curiosity rover for Mars. And she showed us this, she was doing a lecture, and she showed us this image of all of these, just, it's like her 25 dudes when they're testing the parachute. There's like no other women besides her. And I wonder if you could speculate on that. Is there an issue with just the way the general public maybe looks at maybe women in STEM and engineering fields, or what needs to be done there to kind of break that mold and push that boundary more?
Yeah, that's a good question. Also, I think the biggest problem right now with our society might be more of that unconscious bias that you hear about. It's a big term a lot of people are saying today. And the truth is, everyone has biases. And I think really just making sure that you're addressing them and you're aware. And when you see a 22 or right now 25-year-old like super tall blonde girl walk into your autonomous vehicle conference, she is probably there because she's really smart. I think that's the way you have to be tricking your brain, is thinking like when you're viewing people, thinking, like, I don't know, oh, that person might be this or that. Like, you should think, hey, no, that person's probably an engineer. That person might be the CEO of a company. I think it's really just about reprogramming our brains on how we're viewing women and how and what professions we view them in. And I think what we do, or what that will do, is really enable more people to feel comfortable when they are one of the 25 women testing something or walking into a conference, and they feel like they belong. I know that's something that I've been encountering recently, because right now, after Solar Impulse, I've now become more involved in the autonomous vehicle industry. And I remember attending a conference, and all 36 of the panel speakers were men. And of course, you know, you want to have the most knowledgeable people up there, but when I was sitting in the audience, I was thinking, shoot, do I belong at this conference? And I remember coming back and asking one of my guy friends at work and said, like, what would you do if there was a panel and there were 36 women? He was like, well, that would be awesome, but I think that I would probably feel like I was in the wrong place. And I think that's really the important thing, is when younger people are coming into these fields of STEM, they're probably interested. But when they're attending more conferences or in clubs or doing any of these things and they realize people don't look like them, that can maybe discourage them from participating actively. So then they might say, okay, let me just go where people like me are. And I think really, I don't know, that support system and offering to present at the conference yourself if you see there's a lack of diversity is something that I've been challenging myself with.
Now, you've talked a lot about responsibility in this conversation tonight, but can you talk a little bit about, it's funny, when we had Abby on the show, I asked her this question, and I'll ask you the same question. She has a lot of, unbeknownst to her at the time, it wasn't part of her plan, but a lot of young women that look up to her, a lot of young girls that just look up to her and see her as a hero, and because that's what they want to do. There's so many young women that want to do what you are doing, what your career has taken you down, the path that's taken you down. Do you feel really like a sense of kind of responsibility to those young girls who look up to you? Was that ever, I know that was never part of your plan, but when that happened and you get thrust into the spotlight like you've been, that kind of changes everything, kind of like we talked about earlier. But what is that responsibility like for you specifically for guiding kind of young girls into maybe their futures?
I definitely take it as a responsibility. And I know even tomorrow on Monday night, I'm going out with a young girl who's thinking about pursuing engineering in college. And she just reached out to me on social media. And as I mentioned before, the support system, some people don't have that family around them or their friends around them cheerleading them and saying, yes, you can be an engineer, you can rock the world. So every time I give a speech publicly, I say, please reach out to me. If you want me to be your support system, I'm there for you. So I definitely dedicate a lot of my time to volunteering and sharing my experience, but then also one-on-one sessions, talking to people and really seeing how they could, like what they need to realize their passion for STEM.
Do you think it's, I mean, I know you're speaking a lot now and that's phenomenal. I love that. Do you think it's that aspect is really important for the revolution to continue for people that have made it like yourself and have done these remarkable things with their lives to get out in front of the world, get out in front of media, get as much publicity as you possibly can to say, look, I am just one person. You can do this too. Just like I did it. You can do bigger things maybe, you know, to young girls that are watching you. I mean, is that part of this whole thing? How crucial is that aspect of your career?
I think it's definitely crucial. And just as I had mentioned, I remember sitting in the audience when I was a kid and thinking, wow, that would be so cool to be up on stage and present or have something cool enough to present about. And now that unexpectedly in my career, I do have that ability, I'm definitely taking full advantage of giving that back and passing it on to the next generation. And every time I do give a speech, I like to start off by saying, when you guys leave this room, I don't want you to think that I'm the coolest person you've ever met or solar panel airplanes are the coolest thing you've ever heard of. I want them to leave the room thinking, wow, I could do something like that too. Or wow, I could be much more than I had ever thought. I think that's the main message. And I'm glad that I have that opportunity to give it back to people.
That's remarkable because and I like that you said that because it's interesting that people, it just goes to show you like the measure of the kind of woman that you are because, and Abby is the same way with things. So is Shasta and Jessica. They want young women to do better than what they've done so far. Like, you know, this is, yeah, that's great that I'm, you know, that you can do these things too, but go beyond it, go farther, push harder, do more, break barriers. And I think it's interesting to see sort of like the progression from early 1930s with, you know, Louise Thayden and Florence Klingon Smith and Amelia Earhart and all these women that were doing these incredible things in the sky. And then you just see everything kind of push forward and you see, you know, all the way to today and all these women that are doing these groundbreaking things like yourself. It's pretty remarkable to see all that, you know, how the WASP came about and did their thing in World War II and just all these wonderful things. It's like a natural progression. Everybody is sort of one-upping the next person, which is really remarkable. I think that's how, again, that's how a revolution continues and gets bigger and just explodes. And I think that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
So if Chasing Earhart is about anything, it's about impact and legacy. And while we're on the subject, I wonder if you can tell everyone, just from a personal standpoint, what your personal thoughts are regarding the legacy of someone like Amelia Earhart.
It's funny because when I joined Solar Impulse, I was the youngest person on the ground crew and I was 22. The oldest person was 64. And I thought that was amazing that somebody, you know, into an age where most people retire was having this second career helping a solar powered airplane circumnavigate the globe. And I remember he told me a story about Amelia Earhart on my second day on the ground crew. There was this instance where a bunch of people were taking pictures with Amelia Earhart and a guy walked up and said, hey, would you want a pilot in that photo? And Amelia Earhart said, oh, we already have one. And the guy was kind of confused and he's like, wait, what? And, you know, just that empowerment and ability to, you know, not be afraid to say, nope, I'm here. I'm doing this. I'm breaking boundaries. And the confidence she exuded, I think, is huge. And that story, I think, really resonated with me through my whole time at Solar Impulse and thinking that's where I think I first had that connection where I had read about Amelia Earhart growing up, and of course we studied her in history, but I think that moment was whenever I realized the opportunity she gave to a lot of women and the empowerment she was able to give a lot of women to follow their dreams in STEM.
Now, what's next for you? Let's talk about the future for you. We've talked a little bit about what you've done so far. I know you're only getting started. What is next on your career path?
So right now I'm working on exploring materials to help enable autonomous vehicles to either have better functionality with their sensors or else better durability in their interiors. And it's kind of fun because I always tell my electrical engineering friends that I'm working on materials for autonomous vehicles. And they always say, what on earth do those two have in relationship to each other? And I think one thing that I really learned from Solar Impulse is how materials play a huge impact on just engineering design in general. So with the airplane, it had to weigh 5,100 pounds, which to put it in perspective is the amount that a basic SUV would weigh. But it had the wingspan of a regular Boeing 747, so 256 feet. So it was this huge airplane that weighed as much as your SUV. And really, by changing the materials, you were able to have insulation that cut down on the HVAC system and different things to just enable it to be lightweight but extremely durable. And so now I'm transitioning that knowledge to the autonomous vehicle market where, for example, on autonomous vehicle sensors, you can have a sensor that is thousands and thousands of dollars, but if a bug hits it, how will that work? Will it detract like the visibility of the sensor? So exploring really what technologies out there with materials will enable self-driving cars to truly be able to reach that autonomous level.
Okay, so where can everyone follow your work online? Do you have a website and do you have a Twitter you can plug?
My personal website, which is just pagecaslin.com, and then my Twitter handle, Instagram handle, they're all just Paige Caslin. Very simple.
Paige, what can I say? We've been waiting to talk to you for a long time now, and you didn't disappoint. This has been an absolute pleasure. Amelia would be proud indeed. Thank you for your time tonight.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Chasing Earhart podcast, part of our Legacy Retrospective series. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Come back to ChasingEarhart.com each week for another new podcast. While at ChasingEarhart.com, visit our archives and our blog to hear all of our past episodes and interviews with guests such as Brad Meltzer, Tom Vinson, Candace Fleming, Jessica Cox, Abigail Harrison, and Shasta Ways. You can also hear interviews with representatives of all of the relevant hypotheses regarding the disappearance of Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan, such as Tom King, Dick Spink, Gary LaPook, Rick Gillespie, Andy Sherrill, and more. Also at our site, you can find hundreds more posts, project updates, and much more information regarding the life and disappearance of Amelia Earhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a show without any sponsors or ads. We rely on support from listeners like you to keep the Chasing Earhart project operating. You can donate to the show, and as our thank you, receive bonus podcasts, merchandise, and advanced opportunities for Chasing Earhart events. Find a full list of available shows and rewards at patreon.com/chasingearhart. You can also follow the project on social media, where our team posts all of our shows, news, and project information. And that hashtag is @ChasingEarhart. The Chasing Earhart podcast is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by Tom Myers. Podcast music is provided by Dane Jarris Schmidt, and narration is done by Forrest Burgess. The opinions on Chasing Earhart are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films, Incorporated. Chris Evan Films, Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. All movie clips and audio used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of historical education, and no infringement is intended. The Chasing Earhart podcast is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films, Incorporated, and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films, Incorporated. All rights reserved. The Chasing Earhart podcast is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.